Swim for Brighter Days by Zara 5. Read by Hananobira for Anna Drift. Danny kisses Steve late on a Tuesday, early on a Wednesday. They're going over what might be a lead, bent over the new computer table. Only the two of them left after days that dragged on like they were never going to end. The refurnished headquarters are humming with a tired buzz of electricity that reverberates in Steve's ears, pulsates behind his forehead, and eats away at his concentration, exhaustion making it harder not to see the door of a prison cell behind his lids each time he blinks. There was a point when he didn't think it would open for him anymore. Danny's presence makes it easier. It's why Steve stands closer than he should, their arms pressing together as they squint at a series of grainy pictures that all show the same car. A breakthrough, maybe. "You think this is it?" Steve asks, his voice echoing strangely in the silence that is never interrupted by prison bells. "Yeah," Danny says. Just that one word. And then he turns and kisses Steve. No warning. Just turns and leans up and brushes his mouth over Steve's. Steve punches him. He tries to rein himself in at the last moment, but it's instinct, pure and immediate, and his fist draws blood. Danny reels back, his eyes wide and surprised. Hurt. And fuck yeah. Steve knows how that feels. He grabs his wallet and gets the hell out of there. Going home is not an option. So he heads to a club, one that caters to an adult, party-loving crowd rather than a teen audience. And within 10 minutes, he's talking to an attractive tourist. Her dress is obscenely short, her mouth red, teeth flashing white when he teaches her a few Hawaiian expressions. "Hele mai," come here. They go back to her hotel, and it's fine. It's more than fine. Her breasts tight and perfect in his hands, the room bathed in the dim glow of a city night. It isn't enough to make Steve forget the expression on Danny's face. The sky is brightening by the time Steve takes a cab back home. It deposits him in front of his dark house, silence invading his thoughts as soon as the cab is driven off. Danny's car is nowhere to be seen. No sign that he was here during Steve's absence. And even though Steve switched off his phone, he feels like punching something. Someone. Danny. How dare he? Steve isn't gay. Isn't a fag. He's a SEAL. Still in the Navy Reserves, and he doesn't look at guys and wonder what they taste like. Never has problems keeping his eyes averted in locker rooms or showers just because he's not into guys, okay? He doesn't want to fuck them. Never thought about sticking fingers up his ass just to see what it would feel like. Never. Steve is turned on by boobs and soft skin, not by well-defined muscles or a tight ass. It has never been a problem. So how dare Danny throw this at him? How dare he just kiss Steve as if he thinks Steve might welcome it, might return it when he can't? He fucking can't. Fuck. He grabs his trunk from the lanai without even entering the house, simply leaves his clothes on a deck chair and wades into the ocean. The cool water embraces his body. He draws a deep breath before he plunges in, going down, dark water closing above him. When he returns to the lanai, his chest feels less restricted, but his skin is still stretched too thin, threatening to tear as soon as he forgets to concentrate on holding it together. He showers quickly, without bothering to turn on the bathroom light, before changing into fresh clothes. 3 minutes later, he's in his truck, on the way to headquarters. He knows better than to stop for coffee, forcing himself instead to sit up straight to counteract the exhaustion before it can seize control over his body. Allowing himself even a trace of weakness is like stepping onto a downward slide. The truck is too quiet. and when Steve turns on the radio, they're playing a cheesy pop song that would have Danny's hands flying through the air, painting his disdain for Steve's taste in music, when, really, Danny can't have been that disgusted, or he would never have fucking kissed Steve. And what? Why? All those times their gazes caught, was Danny thinking about it then? About Steve's mouth? About the right angle? About his thumb resting against the line of Steve's jaw? Is that why he never took that flight? Or was the kiss a spur-of-the-moment decision? Danny merely looking at Steve with lack of sleep clouding his judgment, making him think it would be a good idea? Steve doesn't know which would be worse, and just fuck Danny. Fuck him. The parking lot is empty when Steve pulls up in front of headquarters. It's still early, barely past 6 a.m, and no one's had much sleep the last few days, so Steve doesn't expect the others to show up before 8. He and Danny were on to something last night, though. Before Danny... No. Enough. When the office envelops Steve in its low-volume blanket of sound, the hum of computers should be familiar. For all that the equipment is new, it's merely a replacement of what HPD confiscated, and the rooms haven't changed. There is no reason for it to sound different, but it does. It itches under his skin, testing its seams, and he stays only long enough to attach a name and address to the license plate he and Danny isolated. On the way out, Steve turns on his phone. Almost 12 hours since he dropped off the radar. He never would have dared to pull a stunt like that with Jameson. But her successor is taking the hands-off approach, having called Steve precisely once to order the reinstatement of 5-0, easily one of the best moments of Steve's life, when he looked over at Danny and all he had to say was, "We're back," before they were clinging to each other. The second hug in the course of their friendship. Steve doesn't know why he's keeping track. 2 voicemail messages. He erases them without listening and texts his destination to Kono. A late riser by nature, she hates early mornings and hopefully won't see his text for another couple of hours. The perp starts running when Steve rings the doorbell. It takes Steve 10 seconds to kick in the front door, another 4 to sprint out the open back door, and then an additional 18 to catch up and bring the guy down with a knee to the back. It's the first time since last night that Steve has felt at home in his own body. When he gives everyone off until Monday, he can feel Danny's gaze resting on him, but he refuses to acknowledge it. The cut on Danny's lip is almost invisible, but Steve knows what to look for, so he locates it easily. Steve's the first one out the door. Danny doesn't even try to follow. Another swim. Over 30 hours without sleep, after about a week of no more than 4 hours on a nightly average. He's had worse. He feels like hell. His email to Mary is a little longer than usual, verging on rambling with no mention of Danny at all, and she's bound to notice that something's wrong. Steve thinks he'd like that. Once he's sent the message, he remains in the seat and stares blankly at the screen, the distant ticking of his alarm clock cutting his thoughts into regular intervals. It isn't really a conscious decision when he opens his browser to a blank search page, then shuts down his computer without typing any keywords into the search field. There are laws that prevent an employer from violating employees' privacy, and those laws should, in theory, also apply to the Navy. Why would they care about websites he visits, about pictures he might look at when he's not even on their regular payroll anymore? And times have changed anyway. Haven't they? Haven't they? Steve doesn't know. But he remembers Emerson, the guy who won every swimming contest, and then one day just wasn't there anymore. When Steve ran into him a couple of years later, a chance meeting, Emerson was walking noticeably close to another guy and looked so much more at ease than he had during his entire time with the SEALs. And then there was Mayer. Mayer. The guy who knew everything there was to know about the right gas mixture for the right depth, right up until rumors started flying, and he didn't resurface from a routine solo dive. They found him 3 days later, the dive computer's records showing that he'd fed pure oxygen into his system, highly toxic, at a depth of 200 feet. It was declared an accident. Steve makes the mistake of lying down for a nap. He wakes up with sweat cooling his neck and the familiar echo of heavy footsteps in his ears. But the phantom taste of Danny in his mouth is new. The impossibility of staying awake forever sits in his stomach like a piece of lead. Instead of using his home computer, he buys an hour of time in a seedy internet cafe that comes with tiny windows and the illuminated logo of Coca-Cola above the counter, the clicking of numerous keyboards oddly comforting. Steve selects a computer that is tucked into the furthest corner of the room, grateful that the guy behind the counter seems more interested in some tech magazine than in the activities of his customers. Male models. The pictures that pop up for the search term are okay. A lot of oil-slick bodies and hard abs, but Steve carefully monitors his reaction when he enlarges a couple and it's nothing out of the ordinary. While his pulse might quicken just slightly, he attributes that to circumstances rather than to anything he sees on the screen, and he finds it easy to keep his breathing even and unaffected. That's until he adds gay to the search field and finds himself staring at attractive guys, naked chests pressed together, mouths open as they kiss. Steve doesn't follow any of the links and erases the browser's history before he logs out, long before his time is up. It feels like people are watching him when he gets up to leave, but when he turns around, no one is even looking in his direction. Only his imagination. His lungs are burning with each breath he takes. 3 months since he's been to the pipe, and the density of the crowd, even on a weekday, hits him unprepared. He lingers by the truck and takes his time changing into his trunks, his back to the waves and the people stretched out on the beach, as he lets the mixed noises of conversations, music, and waves wash over him. It's better than the silence that seems to expand the walls of his house, that smells of cold concrete walls and iron bars when he closes his eyes. There was a time when the pipe felt more like home than any other spot on this island, and he can't think of a place he'd rather be right now, when his thoughts are stuttering from image to image, stumbling over themselves. And he's already wondering whether he'll look at male surfers differently now, whether he'll find his gaze drawn to them. He doesn't want. He can't. Fuck it. Leaving his phone in the truck, he grabs his surfboard and heads for the ocean. Sunshine and waves, a strong offshore wind to create a perfect break. And there was a time when Steve was convinced this was it. This was life, and there was nothing else he could ever need. Even though he knows a lot better these days, he might be better off if the illusion had never broken. He trudges back to his truck with the ocean still ringing in his ears, his head a little light from staring at reflections of the sun for too long. His phone flashes with only one new text message, and he's vaguely surprised. Not only that Danny sent a text, despite his blatant, eloquent dislike for the small keyboard of his phone, but also that Danny is showing something that could be considered restraint. Either that, or it just didn't matter as much to him as it matters to Steve. Does it make Danny's head spin and his stomach twist in a strange kind of guilty sickness? Steve takes great care in securing the straps around his surfboard, overly aware of the phone's blinking red light. He could erase it again. There is no need to see Danny for another 3 days, There's no need to think until Steve's ready for it. He isn't ready. He reaches for the phone anyway.
You'll just engorge me then, very mature, Stephen.
It requires no effort for Steve to hear Danny's voice in his head, twisting the Stephen so it sounds like a term of endearment, even while Danny gives him a narrow-eyed look. Steve tosses his phone onto the passenger seat and starts the engine, sand spitting up in his wake as he pulls out of the parking spot. He makes it nearly a mile before something gives in his chest, each breath wet and painful, stretching his lungs until there is just no room anymore. Everything hurts. Gravel crunches under the tires when he jerks the truck off the road, the engine shuddering, gasping as he turns it off. Silence. A car drives by on the opposite road. The abrupt stop made Steve's phone slide onto the floor, and he fumbles for it, hits reply when he was planning to select delete.
Whatever happened to asking, asshole?
He waits for an answer with both hands gripping the wheel, sunshine streaming in through the windshield and tinting the back of his lids in a yellowish brown. It doesn't take long until his phone buzzes.
It's you.
It isn't an answer, except Steve suspects that in Danny's head, it just might be. Danny never knocks when he enters Steve's house, but he rings the bell when he drops by Chin's, and there is no way in hell that Danny would kiss Kona without her permission. Not unless it was in the interest of a case. He values his physical integrity too much to risk it. So why is it that when it comes to Steve, Danny never thinks to ask? Steve drives past Danny's apartment twice, taking note of the lowered blinds and the Camaro parked nearby. The third time, he hits the brakes and pulls over, the truck coming to an inelegant halt at the side of the road, the engine still running. Steve switches it off. Before the silence can take over all the empty spaces in his body, he jumps out of the truck, the door falling shut with a soft click that echoes in his ears. He can't remember the number of times he stood in this precise spot, about to cross the road and knock on Danny's door. It never required any effort. Steve's t-shirt is sticking to his back, and he hates this, the lingering uncertainty. This isn't who he is. This isn't who he and Danny are. With a brief glance at Danny's unmoving blinds, Steve starts forward and only just makes it before a car speeds past. His pulse is stuttering, tripping over itself with each sharp rap against Danny's door. One, two, three. He's only just lowered his fist when Danny tugs the door open as if he's been waiting. And maybe he has, because he doesn't look surprised. Not even a little. His eyes won't quite meet Steve's, and that just... No, this isn't... Steve doesn't want things to be like this. He wants Danny. Steve launches himself forward, and there's this barely there moment when Danny's eyes widen a fraction, but then they're too close for Steve to see clearly anymore. He can't see clearly at all when it comes to Danny, and maybe that should tell him something. Maybe it should, only it doesn't matter right now, not when Steve pulls Danny into a kiss, and Danny responds easily, eagerly, and yes, he has been waiting. Steve's hip meets the edge of the door, and he kicks out blindly to shut it, the sharp noise apparently enough to startle Danny, make him move back. Steve doesn't want Danny to move back. He wants close. Close, closer. So he follows, reaches out to grip Danny's waist with one hand, his other going for the belt. Steve. Danny's voice is shot to hell, rough in a way Steve has never heard, when all they've done is kiss. Steve wants more, wants Danny to sound low and desperate, begging. And the mere thought lets him tug at Danny's belt with renewed urgency until Danny grips his wrist. Fingers clenching down hard enough to bruise. Steven. Steve stills. What? You're not going to hit me, are you? There's a forced lightness in Danny's tone, but his eyes are too wide, even in the dim orange half-light dominating the apartment. Steve doesn't know how to reply. He shakes his head and moves back in, covers Danny's mouth with his own before there are more questions he can't answer. Danny gives in. With the morning sun hot on the blinds, Danny's apartment is stuffy, allowing only for shallow, uneven breaths. Steve lies motionless for the time it takes to memorize the sweat dampening his chest, the way heat makes his hair stick to the back of his neck. Danny's hand curled around his bicep in a possessive clutch. Steve doesn't watch his own fingers against Danny's as he pries himself free. He rolls off the mattress and stands with his back to the sofa bed for several long seconds, while Danny doesn't wake. Steve is grateful that he doesn't. He is, because he isn't ready to go under. So he gathers his clothes and dresses silently, closes the door just as silently as he steps outside. After the golden-hued shadows in Danny's apartment, the glare of the sun hits him like a physical blow. It isn't the worst Steve's had, but it comes close. The sun has reached its highest peak, paling all colors around Steve. The mountains that surround him seem oppressive, even from where he's perched at the edge of a deep drop. He doesn't remember feeling caged when he came here with his father. Certainly not when he asked Danny to come along. Danny was the first person he'd brought up here. Maybe that means something. And maybe there are more signs Steve missed, even as he was looking. Pointers that were hiding in plain sight, just like a fierce promise that kept Steve from killing prison guards in a desperate bid for freedom. Like the truth behind the heart Danny sketched in the air as he was shrinking away, growing smaller and smaller with each turn of the helicopter's propeller. Or this, here, Danny following Steve up a mountain, trudging up the path with his t-shirt a little transparent with sweat and his eyes narrowed against the sun, a flush to his cheeks that wasn't there last night. Signs. Steve moves over enough for Danny to sit down beside him on the boulder. He listens to Danny's breathing even out, their shoulders overlapping, and waits for Danny to break the silence. Danny doesn't. When Steve turns his head, Danny is already looking at him. His eyes are calm. Steve's heart is beating high in his throat. He swallows and shifts on the boulder, not quite away, but not closer either. How did you find me? I know you. There's a weight to Danny's words, a curious emphasis that Steve thinks he should be able to place. He fails, talking right over his confusion. Why were you going to leave Hawaii then? The way his voice catches, even as he tries to make it a flat, dull question, it's unplanned, just like last night, and everything about Danny that makes it impossible to stay away. Danny doesn't reply immediately, and when Steve glances over, Danny is staring at him a little helplessly. Danny is never helpless, never out of words.
Steve sets his elbows on his thighs, allowing the twin points of pressure to center him. He speaks without looking at Danny. Don't bother denying it, Dano. I found the ticket receipt in your glove compartment, Honolulu to Newark, one way. But I know you didn't take the flight. I know you never left because that flight, it left at the same time you promised to get me out, and... He cuts himself off. For a few suspended moments, the heavy hush of the mountains weighs them down, until Danny clears his throat. Yeah. I'd also promised Rachel I'd meet her and Gracie at the airport. But you didn't. The statement is superfluous, and Steve is bracing himself for Danny to point it out, call him Commander McObvious, with an affectionate twist to the term. All Danny says is, "No. No." The thin air up here makes it hard for Steve to get enough oxygen in his blood system. "Am I the reason you didn't leave?" "No." The word is followed by a pause, and Steve must have flinched, must have made some kind of aborted movement, because Danny twists around to clamp a hand over Steve's mouth. He's suddenly very close. "You," Danny's voice is low, rushed, "are the reason I begged Rachel to return, though. If she hadn't, Steve, you know I'd follow Grace to the end of the world." It takes a second to sink in while Danny removes his hand, and when it does, Steve draws a shuddering breath, not sure what it is that just broke in his chest. "Of course. Of course you would. I wouldn't ask you not to." "I know you wouldn't," Danny says. Still so close, Steve could count each tiny sprinkle of darker color in his light blue irises. "That's why." Shaking his head, Danny blinks and glances at the sky, even as he gestures vaguely between them. "Look, right now, this, here, you hit me when I kissed you. But you are the one who came to me last night. So that, right there? Pretty mixed signals, Stephen. Trust me when I say that some clarification would be appreciated." Clarification. Nothing is clear, except that Danny begged Rachel not to leave Hawaii. Steve's lack of answer stretches the distance between them. When Danny leans forward, his gaze is focused again, the sun glinting on his lashes. "Are you scared?" Steve swallows, shakes his head, lifts one shoulder and looks away. "Danny, the Navy doesn't..." "The Navy?" Danny snorts. "Yeah, of course, that's what you'd be worried about." The derision in Danny's tone is enough to make Steve sit up straighter, the tight space in his chest compressing once more, forcing all air out of his body. "What's that supposed to mean?" "I'll tell you what that's supposed to mean." There is nothing playful about the way Danny grips Steve's shoulder, forcing Steve to face Danny's dark frown, Danny's other hand jabbing into Steve's stomach. "The Navy, okay? Your motherfucking Navy didn't hesitate for even a second to suspend you while you were under investigation. Has that even registered with you? Or are you so well-trained you don't give a flying fuck how they treat you?" By the end of it, Danny's voice is loud enough to provoke a faint echo. Steve watches Danny's lashes tremble and sees how irritation makes the sun-induced flush spread from Danny's cheeks to his ears. But Steve is listening too, and that's why he catches the fondness under the question. He doesn't move away even when Danny's grip tightens. It's certain to leave a bruise, and Steve's reaction is delayed by an abrupt flash of need. He exhales through it. "What are you saying?" "You don't owe them shit, Stephen, so if they are the reason you don't want..." Danny trails off, and when he continues, his voice is much softer, his mouth twisting. And Steve almost reaches out, but he controls himself, waiting for the full picture. "And that's a shitty reason, is all I'm saying. You don't need the Navy anymore because, okay, they didn't clear your name when you were accused of murdering a fucking government official. The Navy doesn't care. It's just a huge, faceless institution with a fancy logo and a kick-ass reputation. But we care, Chin and Kono and I. The Navy, they're not what fucking defines you." "You're saying that you define me." Steve listens to his own words. "Is that what you're saying?" "And Chin and Kono," Danny adds, too quickly. He looks beautiful in the sunshine, so real it hurts a little, even while a strange sense of warmth lets the tightness in Steve's lungs evaporate. "Yeah," Steve nods slowly. "But you, more than anyone else." He reaches up to cover Danny's hand with his own, and it takes a moment for Danny's grip to loosen. When it does, Danny opens his mouth to say something, and now, of course now, he would remember all the words he's just waiting to release. Steve stops their flow when he slides off the boulder and into the grass, pulling Danny down with him, heavy and immediate, as Danny's body settles across Steve's chest. Danny resists for only the barest of instants before his lips part for Steve's tongue. Whatever it was that Danny meant to say, it can wait. Neither of them is going anywhere.
Fam.
This podfic was made as a gift for Unadrift for the Audiofic Archivist Appreciation Meme. We just wanted to say, baby, that we love you and we really appreciate all the hard work and all the hours you've put into the archive. It's an amazing resource and it's meant so, so much to all of us. So thank you, babe. We love you. If you would like to leave a few words of appreciation and gratitude to our archivists, please check out the Audiofic Archivist Appreciation Meme at hananobira.dreamwith.org. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed.